Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall.
Whenever someone talks about bipolar disorder, they almost always refer to it as a chemical imbalance.
Right.
The truth is, I have no idea what that means.
Good. I mean, I'm glad you said that. Not good. I'm glad you said that.
Right. Because
everybody talks about, is it a chemical imbalance?
Right.
Probably.
I mean, but lots of things are chemical imbalances.
Right.
So when we think about what causes bipolar disorder, again, most people automatically go to this idea of a chemical imbalance, but there's far more to bipolar disorder than this.
Right. And we do the same thing with depression. You know,
right.
People talk about it's a chemical imbalance. What I think they're trying to say is that it may be a neurotransmitter.
Right.
Okay. And certainly that's one of the potential causes mm-hmm. of depression, mm-hmm. or which is unipolar depression. Or bipolar depression.
Right.
Yeah, it might be a neurotransmitter, but it might be a number of other things.
Right, and I think that the problem with referring to it simply as a chemical imbalance is that we then assume, well, if it's a chemical imbalance, we should be able to measure those chemicals. We should be able to know exactly what chemicals are out of whack
right.
and fix that, and then we're done.
Well, we say it so knowledgeably.
Right.
You know, so with such certainty, you know, this is a chemical, and you're right. As soon as you suggest that the problem is a chemical imbalance, the implication is we know what the chemical is
right.
and we know how to fix it.
Yeah.
Neither of which is always true.
Right, right. I mean, we have some ideas and we're going to kind of talk right. about those a little bit today, but we need to shift this idea of it's just a chemical imbalance
right.
and as though it's, you know, just as simple as that.
That is the answer.
Right.
Right. And we the fact is we don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. So today we're going to talk about the things that, you know, kind of trigger or the roots perhaps of some of the presentations of bipolar disorder, because it's like all things that we talk about here,
right.
there are many different avenues that can lead to
exactly.
bipolar disorder.
That's right. And we don't, the truth of the matter is we don't know a heck of a lot
right.
about the underlying brain mechanisms mm-hmm. of any of these disorders. You know, we talk with the similar certainty about ADHD
mm-hmm.
and yet we don't really know the pathophysiology of ADHD
right.
and that's probably the most studied of all of these disorders
right.
is ADHD. And we still don't know the pathophysiology of that. People talk about dopamine. Well, there are at least five and maybe more dopamine pathways
right.
in the brain. Each does a different thing.
Right.
They sometimes work together and they sometimes work separately. So we're a long way from identifying with any certainty
right.
what causes these things. But we're gonna bring you up to date.
Right, right. So as we try to do anytime we're talking about a particular condition, we want to kind of go through the biopsychosocial type of model
right.
and kind of, I keep saying kind of, but we want to present that information so that, you know, you're a little bit more informed. So
right.
the first piece that we're going to get to is the genetic piece.
Of course, right.
Because there is, again, like with many of the other conditions we talk about, there seems to be some increased heritability to it.
And I think it's fair to say that in most of these disorders, there is a heritability component.
Right. So, you know, yesterday we talked about the prevalence, and we said, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3%
right.
or so,
mm-hmm.
depending
worldwide.
On worldwide,
right?
Right depending mm-hmm. on where you are and things like that.
Right.
However, if you have a relative with bipolar disorder,
right.
your risk of having bipolar disorder increases by anywhere from 4 to 6 times.
That's right.
So right. if the regular prevalence is say 2%, if you have a family member with bipolar mm-hmm. disorder, your risk automatically increases to anywhere from 8 to 12%.
That's right. Another way of putting it is that 2/3 of people with bipolar disorder have a relative with, you know,
right.
most people with that bipolar disorder have a relative
mm-hmm. right.
somewhere in the family tree. You may not know it. you may not be able to identify it. They may have gone undiagnosed, but it's a very, it's a pretty significant percentage
right.
of people with bipolar disorder have a relative with the disorder.
Right. Now, very interestingly, there are some studies to suggest that if you have an identical twin
right.
with
right.
bipolar disorder, mm-hmm. your risk of having bipolar disorder is 70%.
Right. That's right. It goes way up.
So the closer genetically you are right. to someone with bipolar disorder, people with mm-hmm. who are identical twins are the closest
right.
that we can
mm-hmm.
get to having the same exact same genes. The closer you are to somebody genetically with bipolar disorder, the higher risk you have of having bipolar disorder yourself.
That's right. So if you have a parent, for mm-hmm. example, when you go back to grandparents and aunts and uncles, the risk, the chances of you having bipolar disorder
right.
decline somewhat. Mm-hmm. But that's why it's important to do a thorough family history.
Right.
Because if you have a relative, you're at increased risk.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, this holds some pretty important implications to some of the things we talked about yesterday.
Right.
And that is, if you have a genetic predisposition for bipolar mm-hmm. disorder, but you don't, either you don't know that or you're not really thinking about that, or, you know, the reality is most of us don't think about those kinds mm-hmm. of things in everyday life. But then as an adolescent, say you present with depression.
Right.
Now, that depression could be depression, major depressive disorder
right.
that we talked about mm-hmm. last week, or it could be a depressive episode within what will eventually become bipolar disorder because you have that genetic predisposition.
Right.
And we talked yesterday about the fact that many times people with bipolar disorder don't get diagnosed until much later because we have to wait for a manic episode to present and for somebody to identify it and recognize
That's
it as
right.
a manic episode and then make the diagnosis of bipolar mm-hmm. disorder.
Right.
This is where the importance of heritability comes into play because mm-hmm. if you have depression and you go see someone, especially if you're younger, teenage years mm-hmm. or in your 20s, or even in 30s for that matter, and you've never had a manic episode or anything before, but you've had recurring depressive episodes, when you see a mental health or medical professional, it's really mm-hmm. important that you tell them that there's a family history of bipolar disorder
right.
so that they know for treatment purposes, which mm-hmm. we're going to get to treatment later this week, but it's
right.
going to hold heavy implications when you get to treatment.
That's right. That's why it's tricky making these diagnoses mm-hmm. in before somebody reaches adulthood, before about the age of 30 or 35, because changes could continue to occur.
Right.
And so you have to be careful. And you have to keep close tabs on this thing, because in order to have bipolar 1, mm-hmm. we'll talk about that in a minute, you have to have a manic episode. Well, you're right. You may not have a manic episode, your mm-hmm. first manic episode, until you're 25 or 28
right.
or 30. And so the diagnosis would change
right.
from depression to bipolar disorder.
Right. Absolutely.
So, yeah. So be careful in rushing to judgment
right.
in the teenage years.
Right. So that's the genetic piece. That's the piece
right.
that you're sort of a piece that you're born with. You
right.
know, your genes are what they are. And there are those who say that, you know, the one, you may have a genetic predisposition for bipolar disorder,
right.
but it will only manifest if it's been triggered in some way. And
right.
we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point to make,
mm-hmm.
is that the problem with genetic risk, the problem of having these disorders in your family tree, is that it puts you at risk. And so you have to be very careful
mm-hmm.
and very mindful of not... Of avoiding things that could trigger it,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things we know is heavy drug use, for example,
right.
Heavy alcohol use, excessive stress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these things could be triggers
mm-hmm.
that trigger those genes. The
right.
genes are there,
right?
You know, they're
right.
waiting to be turned on.
Right.
What you have to be careful of is you don't do those. You avoid those things that are more likely to turn those genes on.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, shifting to the biological
right.
piece, there are some concerns as it relates to, you know, the structural
mm-hmm.
and functional aspects of
right.
the brain in regards to bipolar disorder. There are some concerns about the and it seems, again, a recurring theme to talk about the hippocampus.
Right.
That's implicated mm-hmm. that there may be some brain cells that are damaged.
Right.
In the hippocampus in individuals with bipolar disorder. Again, it's not diagnostic. You right. can't do a test to look mm-hmm. at that. But there is a increased risk, increased likelihood of a person with bipolar disorder to have some damage to mm-hmm. some of the cells in the hippocampus.
Right. Yeah, there have been three areas of the brain that have been, now we have some documentation. Mm-hmm. One is the hippocampus.
Right.
And as I was reading this about the hippocampus, because the hippocampus, they associate the hippocampal function with impulse control and inhibition, right. mainly impulses. And I thought of rabies, because the rabies virus destroys the hippocampus.
Mm-hmm.
So a dog or an animal with rabies has little impulse control.
Right.
Okay, when we say a rabid dog, it's a dog that's very aggressive and has a few impulses. And so the same thing, but to a lesser extent, may be happening with mm-hmm. bipolar disorders. You have people with less impulse control because the hippocampus has been damaged somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what that damage looks like,
but
the hippocampus has been implicated. Mm-hmm. The other area that's been implicated is the prefrontal cortex,
right.
both the middle of the middle and underside of the frontal lobes have been implicated, and that's where inhibition is. And
right.
so people with bipolar disorder have less reduced function in the prefrontal cortex,
right.
and the prefrontal right. cortex provides inhibition. And curiously, the third area is the cerebellum,
right.
you know, which is just coming out in the news.
Right.
There's some research being done, I think it's being done in Australia, which has implicated the cerebellum in some of these things, quite by accident. I guess
yeah.
it was a graduate student who was doing research. And they said, well, let's take a look at the hippocampus, and sure enough, there was some white matter reduction
in the
cerebellum,
yeah.
which is a new finding.
Right.
It's just an emerging literature and emerging body of research.
I think we're going to find more and more about the mm-hmm. cerebellum because, you know, in my training, and I would assume with yours too, the cerebellum has been largely ignored. You know, it's sort of been implicated with balance and, you know,
yeah.
some motor function and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But I think that it's going to...
I always taught, what we were taught and what we taught our students was that when you think about the cerebellum, think of a person playing the banjo mm-hmm. or a piano very quickly.
Yeah.
And it's those rapid movements that you can't do consciously that
right.
your cerebellum sort of takes over.
Yeah.
And then balance and coordination.
Mm-hmm.
But now we know it's been implicated in reading.
Yeah.
Now it's being implicated in bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything we have, everything we retain serves a function.
Right.
It's like your appendix, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead and take them. Or like tonsils and adenoids.
Right.
Then you're at later risk for respiratory problems
right.
when you're, you know, because you have them removed. So everything's there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So the cerebellum, which means little brain, is there for a reason,
yeah.
and we're just discovering what some of those
yeah,
are.
It's the little cauliflower-looking
right.
thing
it
in
does.
The back
it's like
underneath
a,
your...
It's like a, every time I make cauliflower, I think of the cerebellum.
Yes.
So,
which makes us big nerds.
Big
nerds.
That's right. We're doing that. So those are three areas of the
yeah.
brain that have been implicated. Now, the interesting issue is, and this is a fascinating area of research, is it that people with those brain differences
mm-hmm.
have bipolar disorder, or is there something
right.
about bipolar disorder, some active process? Because lithium,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the treatments,
right.
don't know what it does,
right.
but lithium seems to change these things and even improve
mm-hmm.
some of these things. We talk about the white matter of the cerebellum seems to grow a little bit
mm-hmm.
in people who take lithium,
right.
which was also a surprise. You know,
right.
why should lithium do that?
Right.
So that's going to be another area of research that we have to keep an eye on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So another thing in the biological realm has to do with neurotransmitters. And when we think of mood, there are...
That's where we started.
Right.
Was that chemical imbalance?
That's right.
Yeah.
We have... Historically, we've attributed mood-related disorders to serotonin.
Right.
And this was the accidental finding back in the 50s with depression,
right?
right? And so we have this whole line of serotonin-related medications that have been developed as a result of this accidental finding with depression. Right. And so when it comes to bipolar disorder, maybe there's some relationship because we do have these depressive episodes, and so serotonin must be implicated in some way. More recently, we're looking at the research has been looking at two particular neurotransmitters, serotonin, but also norepinephrine. And what the newest research is sort of starting to suggest is that when we have a person with depression, that person has low serotonin and low norepinephrine. They're both low. That's why you have low energy and things like that, because norepinephrine is related to energy levels and activation and things like that. With bipolar disorder, however, you have low serotonin, but you have high norepinephrine.
Right.
And so that is what makes you sort of have some of those depressive-like mood-related down symptoms, but also lots of energy and that high activation with serotonin or norepinephrine. And so we have to be careful. Again, we're going to talk about this on Saturday with our treatment podcast. Some of the concerns as it relates to medications used in bipolar disorder, because if you significantly increase serotonin and or norepinephrine in a person with bipolar disorder, you're really setting them up for danger.
That's right. And, you know, we have this black box warning on these medications. You hear about that, or you hear news stories about medications cause suicide. It's not that the medications cause suicide. Right. It's that an antidepressant, and this is a very important part of treatment, an antidepressant, like a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, handles the depression, but it allows the manic episode, the manic phase, it triggers the manic phase and makes it worse.
Right, absolutely.
So that's why diagnosis is so important. We talked about it earlier. You know, make sure you do that family history because bipolar disorder could be lurking.
Right, absolutely. So the last piece of the biological aspect is really some newer research, and that has to do with, you know, we're really narrowing in and getting into the cell itself.
Mitochondria.
You see those videos when you're entering? Mr. Mitochondria, powerhouse.
This always worries me when we start. I always get a little bit. No, I get very tentative when I enter the body of a cell because it's so incredibly complicated.
Right.
The mitochondria is simply one of those structures inside a cell that we're learning a little bit more about, and so here too, it's been implicated.
Yeah, it's like a little bean.
It's complicated,
but
mess.
It's really creates the energy for the cell.
That's really the furnace, the energy source of the cells, the mitochondria.
Yeah.
So, but it's a contained structure inside the cell.
So it's amazing.
I'm reading.
Okay, we're nerding out way too much today. I want to read more.
I'll contain myself.
I know, right?
Okay. So there's a few others.
Yes. So now we're finally getting to some of the social, environmental contributing factors to bipolar disorder. And this is related to, as you said earlier, you know, if you have that genetic predisposition, there are things that can happen in the environment that will trigger the expression of those genes. High stress, abuse, substance abuse, all those kinds of things can trigger the expression of those genes and, you know, create the perfect scenario for the development of bipolar disorder.
You know, we have this phrase, the body knows.
Right.
You know, and if you're under extreme stress, whether it's military or family or it doesn't matter, divorce, and you put your body under that extreme stress, the body's going to respond and it's going to pick on those things that are in your family tree.
Right.
I mean, if you have a family history of digestive problems, ulcers and ulcerative colitis, and IBS and all those things, you're probably going to move in that direction. If you have a history of migraines, you might move in that direction. If you have a history of bipolar disorder, these environmental stressors are going to likely move you in that direction.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, it'll seek out the weak link and find it and exploit it.
So that's the main issue socially and environmentally as it relates to the cause of bipolar disorder. But they're also related to the ongoing expression of bipolar disorder. So when we talk about treatment, the psychological treatment of bipolar disorder really focuses on these things. You have to maintain healthy sleep habits. You have to manage your stress. You have to control these things as best you can, because that's going to decrease the risk of ongoing manic and depressive episodes.
Right. You have to deal with the risk, these factors that trigger the genetic expression of these different disorders. And you know, you can't maintain the same lifestyle that triggered the disorder and just put some medication on it. You know, that's not going to handle the problem.
Right. Some other factors that contribute, age.
Of course.
You know, bipolar disorder tends, to me, there's these age, these ages that you want to keep track of over the course of your life.
Yeah.
You know, if you can make it to three and you're communicating and you're social and those things, you can rule out most of like the autistic spectrum disorders and things like that. If you can make it to eight or so and you're reading and you're paying attention in class, you can rule out learning disabilities and ADHD.
Right.
If you can make it to 25 to 30 and you don't have you don't have hallucinations, you can rule out schizophrenia. If you don't have, you know, some
you
of
don't
these
have a psychotic disorder.
Right.
If you get to 25 and the calendar's still pretty clean.
Right.
Yeah.
You're doing okay.
If you get to 30.
Yeah. If you get to 30, then you can start ruling out bipolar disorder and some of those things.
A mood disorder.
Yeah.
Right?
And interestingly, if you get to 70, 75.
If you get to 50,
and
you're
not
get AARP.
But if you get to 70 or 75 and you don't have any significant memory-related issues, you can start ruling out like Alzheimer's and things like that.
The
because
other
that's
age-related dementias.
Right. So there's these things. But so with bipolar disorder, you're looking at 25 to 30 or so. If you can, if it's usually going to manifest around that time. Mm. And that should make sense, because it's usually around that time in the early 20s or so that you're going through some significant life changes where you're getting out of school, you're entering the workforce. If you're in the military, you know, you're in active military at that time. You're involved in serious relationships and things like that. So that time frame is really critical as it relates to some of those environmental triggers.
And the brain has stopped developing. Around your mid-20s, the frontal lobes have completely myelinated, and so now that process of blossoming and pruning is now over, and you have this, what we refer to as the adult brain.
Right.
And so it's going to express. So age is one thing.
Right. Gender. Bipolar disorder type 1, we'll talk about that tomorrow's podcast, is about equally prevalent in men and women. Bipolar disorder type 2 is more prevalent in women than in men. We also have some hormonal concerns. There seems to be some things with like the thyroid, which we've talked about before, some of those types of medical concerns that could trigger.
In both men and women. We tend to think of hormonal problems mainly in women, but men and women can have hormonal problems.
Yeah. So there's a number of things that we have to monitor and evaluate when we're talking about bipolar disorder. It's not just a chemical imbalance.
Hence the title.
Exactly.
You know, what chemical imbalance? Because there are many other issues here. I think the important message in this one is family history.
Right.
I mean, if you have a family history, you have to be careful and you have to take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
Eat, exercise, and sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, that is it then for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.
Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.